some would say people are in prison because they've broken the law, and that means that some of their rights should be taken away. What do you say to that?
Look, there's no question that there are certainly rights that are removed because the person is in jail, but everyone accepts also that only the rights that are consequential on the person being in jail, which means, you know, the right to move in and out, the right to sometimes to associate with the people with whom you know would normally associate. So those rights have been removed, and that's obviously a consequence of the law and of their actions as well. But outside of that, the more you try to dehumanise those people, the worse it is. The worse it is for the general community, and also it is illegal to remove people's rights that aren't necessarily removed. So the right, for example, to talk, to have ideas, to read, to educate yourself, to improve yourself, all those things are inherent in being a human being. They're human rights. They're defended by the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. But unfortunately, on the ground, they are removed. That you haven't got the right to education in practice, and because corrective services no longer has teachers there. And then the right to exist as a person, having your own view. Now, that's such an important idea.
Now, you're pretty open about the fact that you spent time in prison as well. What was it about your time behind bars that made you want to become an activist?
Well, actually, I'm not really a typical ex-prisoner, to be honest. Now, I was actually a university student, and I was given a 17-year sentence, right? So I spent almost 10 years behind bars, and in that period, because I'm just naturally a bit of a naughty boy, I ended up being most of the time set in segregation units, left separate from other prisoners, and so I was then met the, you know, the worst of the worst, inverted commas, and so I knew what it was like to be, you know, what these people were like. And I discovered actually that, quite honestly, there was not a single person whom I feared. I didn't find anyone who was just a totally, you know, just an obnoxious, angry, malicious person. I didn't find those people, and I was surprised. And then suddenly I thought, well, hang on, this is a community of people who are vilified unfairly, and should really be properly explained, and should be understood by the general community. Because the more isolation that was occurring, the more it is these people that are not understood, are demonised, and in that process, when they return to the community, they're seen as being like dangerous people. So, you know, I end up feeling a part of that community. I found myself much appreciated and loved, and I found such good loyalty and feeling amongst prisons themselves, that I felt I had a special contribution to make.
One of your current campaigns is about getting computers into jail cells. What would having a computer do for a prisoner in a jail cell?
Oh, it's like life and death. I mean, the worst thing inside a prison cell is the boredom, the inability for to actually use your time properly. I mean, it's an outrage, really. You know, that you have the average prisoner is about 30 years old, and for a young person like that to be restricted in their chance to express themselves, to learn, to develop. I mean, it's totally contrary to what the public expects, what the government presents as reasons for prisoners being encouraged. I mean, the whole idea of corrective services, which is the term that's always used, is that people have a chance to improve, correct themselves, and learn new skills, and then when they go out, they survive better. But in fact, what happens is that as people are reduced, they actually become bored, they become unable to properly function, and that means they are less able to survive in the general community. So having a computer in their cells means suddenly the isolation, which is created by the bars and the concrete, that isolation is broken down, and then they have a chance to interact with people, their family, their community, their chance to make complaints, chance to learn, chance to have access to all the services that is intended and is created for them at great expense, but to which they don't get access.
Definitely. Now, Justice Action has a very unique funding model. Can you tell me a bit about Breakout Communications and where that whole idea came from?
Look, absolutely. I mean, look, Breakout Communications is one of the oldest social enterprises. So what effectively it is a business, and the business allows other organisations give their work to Breakout. and the breakout does it at the same rate as they would, as if it were a normal business. And so instead of putting its money in its pocket and becoming, you know, having a BMW and Mercedes, it doesn't have those things. It uses the money to run Justice Action. But the most important thing about that is that that model is that it is totally independent of government. All it requires is that the business itself gets enough work to keep itself going, and we've been running now with that model for 33 years. And it runs on goodwill. Goodwill of the community and appreciation of the community for the work that we're doing. And of course, and because all the people here really are volunteers. They volunteer their time, as do I. No one's employed to become, you know, a fat manager. And we are here for the purpose of making changes in community behaviour and pushing policies.
And speaking of those volunteers, you've got a lot of law students here. They're furiously working away as we speak. How important is it having them in here? And how optimistic are you for the future of the legal profession, having them in here working with you?
Oh, look, they're wonderful. I mean, they're all, you know, feisty people enjoying the experience here. I mean, look, every day we have from 14, 15, 16, 17 people quite often every day. So, you know, five days a week, that's, you know, 70 or 80 people, a lot of people involved in what we're doing. And of course, they, you know, they're loving their time here. You see the bright eyes all the time, engaged in real changes, enjoying the interactions. Excited, working together as subgroups on certain campaigns, with developing expertise, learning to how to present cases, and often coming into the courts and into the tribunals, actually presenting cases for the first time. So, you know, it's a totally new experience for them, and I love the energy they bring in and the optimism, and also understanding that the industry attitudes, the culture in quite often in these situations, isn't what the normal person sees. So they're exposed to a whole new value system that is really useful for them, and they come in fresh and then prepared to oppose it because they feel a sense of outrage. That's marvellous.
Great. Brett, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Jason. Wonderful talk with you.